Vanguard is working hard to balance opportunity and risk for investors in this time of volatile yields. We know financial advisors are working hard to do the same. Visit vanguard.com/fixed income today. Important information. All investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. Bond funds are subject to the risk that an issuer will fail to make payments on time and that bond prices will decline because of rising interest rates or negative perceptions of an issuer's ability to make payments. Vanguard Marketing Corporation, distributor.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
How are you now? How are you? Right now. The road trip's over, folks. Your Montreal Canadiens are back on home ice. Hello and welcome to episode 72 of the Bottom 6 Minutes podcast, presented by Habs Eyes and the Prize. I am Matt Drake, and I'm finally, I think, over my cold. We're here to talk about your Montreal Canadiens returning to the Bell Centre and playing against the Philadelphia Flyers, who are mired in a playoff race. So you know that they're going to come in looking to do some damage, right? They're not going to give you an easy one for sure. As a matter of fact, I was expecting them to give them a tougher test than some of the top teams that they've played recently, just because those top teams, they don't need the 2 points as badly as Philly does. Like Philly, every single point for them is absolutely crucial. So, you know, you knew that they were rolling into the Bell Center, guns blazing, really trying to take home those 2 points. So I was kind of excited about this one because it means nothing for the Habs, but they get a chance to kind of play spoiler a little bit. And whenever you get that chance, you know, I've never played in the NHL, but I've played on some teams before where we knew we didn't have much of a chance of getting somewhere. And you play against a top team and you just get that little bit of extra, get up and go in your game. And I was wondering, are the Habs going to have some of that coming for them in this one? So we're going to get to the recap and I'll let you know exactly how much of that they had in them. But before we do, I got to let you know that the tournament is here. I'm talking, of course, about March Madness, folks, and BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. And remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. And the game between the Philadelphia Flyers and the Montreal Canadiens, it started, I'm going to be honest with you guys, slowly. There's a little bit of back and forth going on, but it's a very low event. And keep that in mind because it was a pretty significant theme throughout this game. Low event. And when I say low event, right, I'm talking mostly about, you know, scoring chances, shots on goal. I'm not necessarily talking about actual events on the ice because this was a very physical game from the initial drop of the puck. They were going after each other big time. You could see, like, they were digging in. It kind of felt like a playoff game a little bit, just with how physical it was. The officials, you know, they started making some penalty calls. They're calling some ticky-tack shit, but they're calling it on both sides. So you guys know me. I'm pretty prone to being upset at the officials, but early on in this game, I'm not, honestly. You know, the Flyers got an opportunity early. They did nothing with it. The Habs got an opportunity of their own afterwards, and they did enough. Great puck movement in the offensive zone. Mike Matheson gets it up at the point, throws it down to Juraj Slafkovský at the goal line. He immediately crosses that puck through the crease over to Nick Suzuki, who's able to control it and put it into the net past Samuel Ersson. I think it's Samuel Ersson anyways, or I don't know. I have to double check his first name, but Ersson, he gets it past him anyways. His 30th goal of the season for Nick Suzuki. What a season from him. And it's 1-0 for the Montreal Canadiens. We get back to 5-on-5 hockey, and the Habs, again, it's a low event game, but when the Habs are able to get it into the offensive zone, their puck movement is just great, even at 5-on-5. And later on in the period, some more of the same shit. They get into the offensive zone, really good movement of the puck. This time, it's an exchange up at the blue line. Jordan Harris and Nick Suzuki exchange it a little bit. Nick Suzuki finds it over to Jaden Struble. He gets a shot on goal, and Jesse Elinen finds the rebound and puts it in past Ersson, and it's 2-0 for your Montreal Canadiens. That's your score at the end of one period. A really impressive period from them overall, particularly in the offensive zone. Again, chippy. It was physical. But really, the story of the period was the Habs and their ability to impose themselves once they got that puck on the north side of the offensive blue line. And we go into the second period. It remains a really low event period from a shot perspective, even though we actually started the period with a full 2-minute 4-on-4. So we had tons of open ice. There was coincidental minors at the end of the first period that get like a full 2-minute 4-on-4, and nobody could really get any shots on goal. Nobody scores either. And almost 7 minutes into the period, the Habs get a chance back on the power play. With how well the first one went, I thought this was going to be the 3-0 goal, and maybe they could start running away with this game. But on that one, they actually struggled just to get the puck into the offensive zone. Philly picked up on how well I think they were doing in the offensive zone with the puck, and they started, credit to John Tortorella on that, they started really trying to defend the zone entry better, and they did a good job of it. It really changed the complexion of that game a little bit in the second period. And that continued through the entire period, really. It was a wildly low event period, but a lot of physicality, and somehow there's plenty of that going on, even though there's just really not a lot going on offensively at either end of the ice. And the score at the end of two periods remains 2-0 in favor of the Montreal Canadiens. Early in the third period, though, we get a weird wraparound, like a big scramble in front of the net, in front of Caden Primeau's net for the Montreal Canadiens. And Garnet Hathaway comes in as Caden Primeau is trying to cover it up with his blocker hand and kicks it into the net. They call it a goal on the ice, right? But they do decide to go back and review that. And I'm telling you, folks, if you haven't seen this one yet, go to my Twitter. Here I go, plugging my own Twitter again, at DrakeMT. I have a clip of that up. And you can see clear as day, this is the most obvious kicking motion that I've ever seen. Right? And I was worried that they were going to just let that go and they were going to force the Montreal Canadiens to challenge. And then who knows what happens on the challenge, right? Challenges seem to be basically 50-50 this year. It's really hard to predict what they're actually going to call. And to my surprise, they go to the review and they come out and they do call it a distinct kicking motion. They make the right call. So I was very surprised at that. And we go back to 2-0 immediately. Garnet Hathaway's goal waved off. However, the Habs had a delayed penalty on that same play. So if the puck didn't go in, they would have got a penalty. So because the goal got called back, they now have to actually kill that penalty. They do manage to kill it, but the Flyers took some momentum from that. Now they're pressing a little bit. And because they're in a playoff race, like I mentioned, they're going to be pressing a little bit harder than typical teams would because they really need the 2 points more than those top teams that you've been playing against recently. And guess what happens? Morgan Frost, you know, puck kind of gets deflected out into the corner. He's basically, he's below the goal line 100%. He throws it back out in front. He's trying to hope for a deflection, and he gets one. It bumps off Caden Primeau and into the net, but hang on a second. The Montreal Canadiens challenge that the entry prior to that shot was offside. And this was a good challenge by Martin Saint-Louis, because the first replay that I saw on RDS, it was very clear that it was offside. I forget who it was. I want to say it was Morgan Frost himself, actually, that had his skates over the line before the puck crossed. Doesn't matter. It was clear, and it was a good call. Really good work by the video staff, as well as Martin Saint-Louis, they call it. And it goes back to 2-0 yet again. So two goals scored by the Flyers, both of them discounted in the third period, and the Habs maintain their two-goal lead on two good calls by the officials, and one of them a good challenge by Martin Saint-Louis. And just past the midway point, Nick Suzuki actually scores his second goal of the game. That one doesn't count either, though. He was a double tap, right? The puck comes into him, it's floating in the air, and he taps it with his stick out of the air. That one was good, it was low, but the second tap, that one was above the crossbar, and then he tapped it a third time, actually. So he touched it three times. Really good hand-eye coordination, but that doesn't count because the second tap was above the crossbar. And another good call by the officials. Mark this day on your calendars, folks, because I've just been doing nothing but noting good calls by the officials in this game. Not something I do very often on this podcast. And it remains 2-0 for the Montreal Canadiens. However, we get down to the final minutes of play, and the Flyers decide to pull Erickson for the extra skater, and almost immediately, Mike Matheson gets the puck in his own zone. He decides to clear it with his legs, skates it out, gives it over to Yoel Armia, and he scores into the empty net. That's 3-0. The Flyers didn't give up, though. They re-pulled Erickson again after that to get the extra skater, and Owen Tippett sniped one top corner to break up the shutout. Why'd you have to do that, man? And the Habs apparently were upset about that, because Jake Evans would go down the ice and he just kind of dribbled one. Just a very slow, dump-in shot that ended up in the net to make it 4-1. Actually, Evans looked upset about that. He did not want that puck to go in. He was just trying to kill off the clock. But it went in 4-1, and that ended up being your final. That was with 3 seconds left on the clock. So game over, 4-1 in favor of Montreal. Honestly, a pretty good game from your Montreal Canadiens, folks. I spent a little bit longer on the recap than I wanted to, so we're going to go straight into your player of the game. And, the first star of the night in the Bell Center was Caden Primeau, and I don't disagree with that selection. I think he played a fantastic game, and I think he could have been a very good selection for me as your player of the game. However, I got to go with the captain, Nick Suzuki. What a season this guy's having. It's his first 30-goal season of his career. He has set yet another career high for points. Never mind goals. Yeah, obviously he set a career high for goals, but he set a career high for points as well. And he has done nothing but set career highs for points in every single season since he joined the Montreal Canadiens. His very first season, he scored 41 points, right? But he did that in like 70 games or something like that. And the next season was shortened, right? COVID. And he still scored 41 points. So I count that as setting a new career high, because obviously he would have surpassed it if that season continued. And ever since then, it's been career high, career high, career high, career high. What more does this guy need to do to prove to people that he's a legitimate number one center in the NHL? I mean, he still has a chance. Like, don't forget, he still has a chance this season. If he keeps playing the way that he is, he might actually have his first point per game season. He might get over 82 points. He hit, 69, I think? I might have to double check that. It doesn't matter. Either way, he's going to cross 70 for the first time in his career. And the fact that he's been able to do that on a rebuilding team is nuts. Like, he lost his best winger that he's had since he's been on the Montreal Canadiens has been Cole Caulfield. He lost Cole Caulfield for a good chunk of time, right? They haven't actually figured out the best line for him until this season, and basically midway through this season, when they, because they had Juraj Slafkovský on that line early on in the year for a little bit, took him off, and then when they put him back, that's when they finally seem to click and go, all right, this is the right configuration for us. This is our top line. And Nick Suzuki, despite the fact that he's at a rotating cast of line mates, despite the fact that his best winger has missed significant time due to injury, he has just done nothing but do a career high after career high after career high. This kid is the truth. I cannot understand for the life of me why there are still so many people on the internet that insist on shitting on Nick Suzuki and, oh, he's not a true number one center. It's, you know, I think your perception, if you actually think that, your perception of what a number one center is drastically skewed. You think a number one center is just Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Sidney Crosby, that's it. Because we're looking at a guy right now that's showing you abilities that maybe, I don't know, maybe 15 dudes who play center in the NHL have. I'm telling you, when this team actually has, you know, a ready-to-go second line, like when this team is able to run Kirby Dach on the second line with Alex Newhook and Joshua Roy, just wait and see what Nick Suzuki is able to do. Because this season so far, other teams have been able to pretty much key on Suzuki's line. That's the one that can hurt you. That's the one that we're going to try and stop. And they still haven't been able to actually stop him. And he's getting better. Game after game after game. I cannot wait until this team actually builds lines below him, right? They've already got a second line basically ready to go. Of course, two of the guys are hurt, so they can't use it right now. Third line, I think you're pretty close. You've got some pieces that you can use there, but you may need to add some more. Maybe some people that you pick up in the draft, or maybe some people that you pick up in free agency or in trades. Fourth line, kind of same deal. You know, I think Jake Evans is probably a really good center for the fourth line, but I'm getting a little bit too deep here. The point is, when they fill out the rest of that roster around Nick Suzuki and make it, you know, a top-to-bottom lineup to be reckoned with, it's going to be way harder for other teams to key on Nick Suzuki. And what is he going to do then? What's he going to do when you can't just stick, like if you're the Penguins, you can't just stick Sidney Crosby on him and think, well, Crosby's better than him, so we're going to do all right. What's he going to do then? He's going to tear it up. I've said this before on Absent Minded. He's going to have multiple 80-plus point seasons, and I think that starts next year. I don't think he's getting there this year. He might. He still has a chance. But I think next year it starts a streak for him, and maybe it's going to be three or four in a row. This kid is ready to go, and it's been a treat watching him play because he's had nothing but bad luck on the lineup front, on the injury front. Not to him specifically, but to his line mates, and on the team building front in general. He came in to a rebuilding team. He got basically one good year of Carey Price, and went into the rebuild with Montreal, and now he's got to wear the C on top of that in the toughest city to wear the C, aside from maybe Toronto. I was going to say New York, but really only Toronto compares. So Nick Suzuki, player of the game. What a game. What a season. He deserves it, and he deserves that C on his chest. He's playing like it. Outside of Suzuki, Caden Primeau, I think he deserves a mention there. He played great. He deserved a shutout in that one, honestly. That goal by Tippett at the end, you know, it's a 6-on-5 goal. I feel like maybe he could have stopped that shot, but I refuse to actually blame him for that shot going in when he made some very nice saves in that game. Obviously, he got technically beat twice, but both of them were bullshit goals. Those don't count. And the refs made the right calls on them, so I'm again, not going to charge those to him because they don't count. They're not supposed to count. Those were good calls. And that moves me away from Caden Primeau to another, I guess, positive take that I wanted to make, which was the officiating. I actually, and this is going to be a surprise to a lot of people who listen to this podcast, I really enjoyed the officiating in that game. It was even. It was fair. They made some ticky-tack calls, but they made them on both sides. They refused some goals, three total goals, two on one, one on the other. So I guess you could say that was unfair, but I felt like every single one of those refused goals were 100% fair. They were good calls. Really a rare display of excellent officiating in the NHL. I was impressed by that. So we talked about Suzuki, talked about Primeau, talked about the reffing. I would throw Juraj Slafkovský in there as well. I thought he had a great game, imposed himself physically. He was driving the middle of the ice, taking the middle of the ice whenever he wanted it, it seemed. So I thought that he had a really good game. Yoel Armia, once again, continued his resurgence in this season. Ever since he came back from Laval, he's been nothing but fantastic. Really been enjoying his game. Alex Newhook was an absolute beast in that game. He had a back check at one point in the... Was it in the first period or the second period? I don't know. The highlight's up on my Twitter account. There I go, plugging my Twitter account again, at DrakeMT. But he was a good... He was a line and a half behind the puck carrier. Just turned the Jets on and somehow found his way back into that play and stopped a scoring chance with his stick. That was one of the most ridiculous back checks I've seen in a long time. And the thing that really stood out to me about that is Alex Newhook is not supposed to be playing center. He's supposed to be playing the wing. If this defensive responsibility, this defensive dedication that he's showing extends to his play at the wing when he moves back there next year, look out, folks. Look out. I already mentioned, I think your second line next year is Joshua Roy with Kirby Dach in the middle and Alex Newhook on the other side. That line is going to have so much defensive acumen, it's not funny. And of course, we already know that they can hurt you at the other end of the ice. That is going to be, I'm telling you, folks, if they don't run that line, I'm going to be so upset. The only reason for them to not run that line is if they somehow magically make a trade for somebody way better than any of those three that needs to be on the second line so badly. It's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to watch, and Alex Newhook is going to be a big part of it. Defensively in that game, I mean, I could single out a few players, but David Savard, again, basically playing goaltender with the way he blocks shots. It's incredible. Arbor Jack, I had a bit of a rough one, but he was physical and he was doing the things that I guess you want a player like Arbor Jack to do when you're playing against a John Tortorella Philadelphia Flyers team. Get physical and kind of force things, you know, in the face of your opponent. And Jaden Struble played really well. Jordan Harris played really well. I really don't have anything negative to say about that game. Josh Anderson, I guess, made some really boneheaded plays, but he also made some nice plays. So even him, I find it hard to get upset. So my last thought before I end this one is going to be Tank Nation. Look, Ottawa, as far as when I'm recording this, they were winning anyways. So I'm going to assume that they won tonight, which means that the Habs did not ruin their draft position whatsoever with that win. So as long as that's the case, as long as I'm still right about that, then I feel pretty confident in saying that this was a good win where the Habs got to play spoiler, right? They got to kind of ruin the Flyers' playoff aspirations a little bit. And I'm going to leave you with one final thought because my buddy Scott Matla tweeted something out earlier tonight. All right, he tweeted out that, what was his exact tweet? Hang on, I'm going to go find it. I want to make sure I get this right. I want to make sure that I'm not just talking out of my ass. I want to make sure that I actually give you the full tweet because he got responded to by Nick Suzuki's own father, Rob Suzuki. All right, so Scott, he tweets out, I don't know what it is, but the Flyers bring out the petty side in Nick Suzuki. And Rob Suzuki, Nick Suzuki's father, once again, replies and says, if you know, you know. So there's something going on there. Nick Suzuki does not like the Philadelphia Flyers. And as a result, I don't like the Philadelphia Flyers. And as a result, I will say the Philadelphia Flyers must lose every game that they play against the Montreal Canadiens, captained by Nick Suzuki from here on out. Vive les Canadiens. The Flyers, I hope you miss the playoffs. We're going to end it there. We're running over 21 minutes, almost 22. So, c'est une grosse soirée pour les employés de soutien. We are on Spotify, Google Play, Apple, Megaphone. No, we're not on Megaphone anymore. I don't know why I keep saying that. I'm on Twitter at DrakeMT. Drop me a follow. I would appreciate that very much. Thank you, as always, for listening. This episode was brought to you by BetOnline. Et à la prochaine.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.